You're listening to the School Success Formula with me, Lucy Parsons. This is episode number 30. Hello and welcome to today's show. Today I've got a fantastic interview for you with Elizabeth Hutchinson, all about the hidden treasures of your child's school library. Now, you're not going to believe what you learn in this episode, because I think school libraries are an often overlooked and neglected resource that is there for every student to use and benefit from absolutely for free. But in this episode, Elizabeth's going to let us know how to make best use of the resource that is the school library, but also tell us how school libraries and librarians are under threat and what we can do to support them to maintain this free resource open for all students. Before we go over to the interview though, I just want to announce the giveaway winners for my 6 month anniversary celebration. So back in episode 26, when the podcast became 6 months old, I announced a giveaway that for anybody who left a review by midnight on the 3rd of January, they would be entered into a draw to win a signed copy of my book. And I have drawn the winners, and they are Rachel Lamb, 13 Jasmine Panisar, and Kunmeister 91. So those three people, if you're listening, please send me an email at lucy@lifemoreextraordinary.com letting me know your proper name, other than Rachel, I can tell your proper name and address, so that I can sign your copy of the book and pop it in the post for you. I just want to thank everybody who's left a review or tried to leave a review. I really, really do appreciate it. I've loved reading them, and I just want to say thank you for taking time out of your day to do that for me. It's never too late to leave a review, even though the giveaway has closed. So if you'd still like to give me some feedback and just say thank you for the work that I put into the podcast, then I'd really appreciate it. Okay, one other thing before we go over to the interview. Tomorrow evening, which is the 11th of January 2018, I'm going to be holding a free live class or a webinar called A Step-by-Step Guide to Getting the Top Grades. So if you'd like to sign up to this, you can go over to the show notes, which you'll find at lifemoreextraordinary.com/30, and you'll find a link there to sign up for the webinar. And what I'd really love is if you came along with your children who are taking exams and all listened in together, so that you can all get the top tips. What I found through teaching my course, the Exam Success Formula, is that when parents and students learn about these things together, it gets the very best results. So it would be fantastic if you could come along to the webinar or class, whatever you want to call it, together. Okay, let's go over to this interview with Elizabeth now. Enjoy. Our guest today has worked in libraries all her working life, starting at 16 and eventually gaining her degree in librarianship after having her four children. She chartered in 2006 and achieved her master's in 2016, and continues to try to inspire students to use and enjoy libraries. Her main interest is information literacy and its importance in the curriculum. She strongly believes that schools need to embed it at policy level in order for it to be effective. Collaboration with teachers is where her research has taken her. Advocacy of school libraries and librarians is a keen area of interest. She was delighted to be shortlisted and come runner-up for the LILAC Information Literacy Award in 2016. She has presented at conferences internationally and enjoys writing about the importance of school librarians. She is very interested in the potential of social media and online tools to support teaching and learning, and intends to keep updated not only for her own personal development, but to try to be one step ahead of the students that she teaches. Welcome to the School Success Formula, Elizabeth Hutchinson.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
Yeah, it's fantastic to have you here. So what do you love about libraries so much that made you start working in them at the age of 16 and has you still there today?
well, To be honest with you, if you'd asked the 16-year-old me what I liked about libraries, I probably couldn't tell you. I wasn't a particularly good reader. I liked reading, and it was a job that fell in my lap by accident. I wasn't sure whether I was going to go and do A levels or not. The job came just as my CSEs at those times finished, and it was a maternity leave, so I was going to go and do performance work and see where it went. And I ended up loving it and deciding that actually my path at that time wasn't academic, and libraries was where it was going to be.
Wow, what was it that you loved so much about it at the age of 16?
I think working with the public was a big thing for me. The fact that you could meet different people, you could share their love of reading and an interest. And the job at the time, I worked at Newcastle City Libraries, and it was very varied. There was an opportunity to move on in your career. You could. I started off in just the public library, issuing books and putting them away, and then got promoted to the local studies library in Newcastle, a fascinating department, where I was quite young in compared to the other people that I was working with, and I was very much nurtured, which was good for me at the time, and then got promoted again to working in a branch library. So I had a real in my when I was sort of between 16 and 21, I had a lot of it was comfortable but enjoyable at the same time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So tell me, Elizabeth, because you just said it, there's more to it than meeting the public and giving out books and putting them away again. And I think that's what most of the general public see of librarians is that they take books off the shelves and put them back on again. So what else is involved in the profession?
Well, it depends on whether you're talking about public libraries or school libraries. So we'll stick with school libraries. You have to sort of think about the collection that you are creating. You have to think about the people that you are your service is offering. So it's that content curation, but on top of that, it's making sure that the people that are going to use your library are able to access it. So, we all think about going into a library and actually, having a browse around the shelf because we want a fiction book and, we want a new story. That's how you find one. It's alphabetically on the shelf. But within a school setting, you have to think about the curriculum and how the resources that you're buying fit in. So as a librarian, my role is to work alongside teachers to make sure that the topics are being covered. That there's both physical books but also the online content, and actually helping students to access that information as well as they can and as quickly as they can. We live in a world, don't we, where Google is the predominant search tool, and actually there's a lack of skill in that kind of searching. So my role is to help teachers and students to access quality information. So that's where that's where my expertise come in. I'm an information professional, which sort of explains it a bit better than a librarian, I suppose.
I suppose it does because it goes beyond just kind of the building that you're in, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So does that link into what you said about information literacy? Can you explain that to us a little bit more?
Yeah, so information literacy is understanding when information's needed. It's to be able to find, evaluate, and use effectively the information that you find. So we're talking about the fact that, you might be able to type the question into Google and get some kind of answer from it, but actually, you need, as a student, you need the skill of finding those academic sources. Even, we're talking about even primary into secondary and then on to university possibly, but certainly in secondary school, that ability to know that the tool that you need to answer your question is a book maybe, or if it's not a book, then it's Britannica Online or one of the online resources that maybe your school library has. And knowing that once you get to that tool, it's you can't type the question in. You have to have the skill of keywords and understanding the database, and it's a demonstration of understanding the skill of research that when you're doing a research topic, needs to be done properly.
So have you seen that information literacy decline over time as people have become more and more reliant on Google?
Yes, but in a strange way, I think the tide is beginning to turn. You know, my children are grown up now, but I remember them coming home from school and being told that the teacher had told them to click and find the information, and that was a reference to going and, you know, doing an online Google search. The thought at that time was to make your children independent by allowing them to search the internet. And what we found is that with the information overload, you've now got people saying, "Whoa, we need to be able to actually understand the information that we find when we do a Google search. So what do we need to do about it?" And actually, the Guernsey, which is where I'm from, mm-hmm. We've just created a new curriculum, and a lot of that is skills-based.
Yes.
And an understanding that actually if we don't teach the skills, we are doing our children a disservice, because we're actually allowing them to be brainwashed by what comes through Google at them. And that's, you know, it's a great time for school librarians, because we have the skills, and actually the schools are now in a place where they are beginning to understand that they need those skills again.
Yeah. So what just struck my mind there is, you know, is having that kind of critical ability to critically evaluate what Google throws up for you. And yeah. I've been watching House of Cards on Netflix recently, and there's this whole thing with the election in the program, because it's about the US presidential system. Both of the candidates tried to manipulate the main search engine. They didn't call it Google, they called it Polyhop, but they did stuff to manipulate basically the search results in the search engine. So is that the kind of thing that you're wanting people to be critical and skeptical about?
Well, just to be aware of it is the fact that Google has got so clever, hasn't it, that mm-hmm. that you type something in and all of a sudden you're getting adverts for whatever it is that, yeah. you know, that links to it.
And basically driven, isn't it?
It is very much, yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting, when you change the search from a holiday search or a wanting a new car or you know, something like that, to an academic search, is that Google begins to try and second guess what you want. Mm-hmm. So if you are not critically evaluating that information, you might be missing out on a whole load of stuff that is actually more relevant. So your skills have to be better, and not to accept everything that just lands on your screen at the first question that you
type
in.
Not necessarily, you know, the things that are on Google page one as well.
Absolutely. Well, very rarely anybody goes beyond page one, do they? Do you know, I know that, you know, there are times when I do, but I think it's teaching them that, you know, don't type the question in. I can't tell you who said this, but a really good quote is if you can find the answer via a Google search by typing the question in, the question's not very good. And that's so true. Do you know, if we're doing some kind of research, our questions shouldn't be answered by Google, because you need to be looking at it from different perspectives and different point of views.
And if you've accepted, that's really interesting, because I've blogged now for nearly 2.5 years, and you know, I try to make my blog as accessible as possible to people doing Google searches. So you know, I research what people have typed into Google, and those things stimulate the blog topics that I write about, and particularly determine what the titles are going to be. And it's been really effective in helping me to kind of get to the top of Google searches, and so people actually find my blog. So you know, it's quite interesting, like, you know, from my point of view, sitting here as a producer of internet-based content, talking to somebody like you who's from the other point of view.
Yeah, well, I'm going to try and stop that, you know. but there are skills and techniques, you know. I blog as well, as you know, and there's, if you put certain specifics in your title, it's more likely to get picked up. Mm-hmm. So numbers work. Numbers is a big thing that I'm using at the moment. But it is definitely, you know, titles and the way Google works. So it's not about, you see, what I get a lot of is from teachers is saying that it's, if we prevent them using Google, it's preventing children being independent. And actually, what school librarians are saying is that that actually, if you give them the right skills, it makes them more independent because they're able to evaluate when they do go online. So, you know, an independent child in year three is a child that can use the school library catalogue effectively, an online tool to help them find a book that is good independent learning. You know, those children then learn how to access Britannica online. That's the one encyclopedia that we use. But, you know, if they can use the skills to do that, that's independent. So when eventually they're in secondary school and they've begun to build up these skills, they are then able to use the internet, then they are able to do it effectively. You know, it's sort of that, rather than just let them do it, let's teach them how to do it properly.
Yeah. So what resources do school libraries have other than books, that kind of thing? You know, everybody knows that books, libraries are full of books. So what else is there that's kind of this treasure trove that people perhaps aren't quite as aware of? Like, you've been talking about Britannica being online. You know, is that a resource that's paid for by schools? Is it licensed to schools? And is it something that people can't access from home? What is there that they can't really get anywhere else?
Well, I think it depends on school to school, and obviously it depends on budgets, and budgets are being squashed. I can only talk from the service that we provide. Mine is slightly different because I work for a school's library service, so we provide a collection of online resources that each of our school libraries here in Guernsey can access. So, you know, they've all got access to Britannica Online purely because, if you buy, you know, how we used to have Britannica is 20 volumes, didn't we, on our bookshelves? And you know, what was it? I think the quote is 27% of the world's facts changes every year. Yeah. Now, if you take that statistic and you've got a 20-bound volume of Britannica, it's going to be out of date fairly quickly. Mm. So the fact that it's gone online is really important. It is a paid-for encyclopedia, but the difference is, you know, the comparable is Wikipedia, that's free.
Yeah.
You're paying for the fact that there are 100 researchers guaranteeing that the information that you're finding when you look for it is correct. So, you know, it is a paid for service. A lot of the online journals and tools that we buy, there is a fee for them, but actually, I'm you know, quoting people, then I can't think where the quotes come from, but where is the value of free? And actually, the difficulty is you need to question why somebody's going to give it away for free. If you've worked hard at writing something that is of value, you know, I'm going to correct myself, there are people who do give things away for free, but the majority of us need to be paid for our hard work. And actually, that's where the controls come in, isn't it? Is the fact that if you're going to buy something, you want to know that you're buying value. I'm not saying that you should never use Wikipedia, but you have to be more skilled at using it than you do using an online journal or encyclopedia that has been bought and paid for. So it's going to be different across all schools. You know, some schools are going to be able to afford, you know, a lot of good quality online resources, and others aren't. And I think if you are listening to this and you're at a school that doesn't have online resources, your public library definitely has resources that you can use for school, that you can use by just having a library card, which is free. You know, so it doesn't have to cost you anything if you haven't got them via your school.
Yeah, it's funny, really, listening to you saying that. You know, you pay because the resource is of greater value, but then everybody who accesses the library is basically accessing it for free. So
absolutely, but somebody somewhere is having to pay for it. Do you know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so there is a payment, but actually, yeah.
Because I was talking about this the other day with my husband, because a friend of ours who we knew at university has now published two novels, and we were saying, you know, does he actually get any money from people borrowing that from a library? So, you know, because I've published a book as well, and, you know, I've talked to people about how little money I get for each copy of the book sold. I only get, the book retails for £12, and I only get about £1.80 for every copy that's sold, which is actually a really good deal compared to many, many authors. And so how do libraries support the work of authors?
Now, you know, I'm not an expert in this, but I do know that there's an agreement with authors that any book that is bought by a library and borrowed, there's a percentage that is paid to the author.
Okay.
And I really don't know how it works, but I, you know, I do know that it's based on the number of loans. So if you've got a book that is going out a lot, then you are getting, you know, I don't think you're going to get £1.30. I think about 30p comes into my head, but whether it's as much as that, I'm not sure.
I think this friend of mine said it was something like you had to register as an author for this scheme, and then I think you got 11 pence per borrow or something like that.
I think it might, you know, you might be right, but certainly there is a scheme that allows authors to not lose out, and I think that's works because obviously the more your book is borrowed, you'll have to buy more because the book is going to fall apart because there's been a few people borrowed it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're getting the value from the fact that it is bought more than once.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there are benefits. And certainly, you know, there is a thing that if you've loved an author, people will, that you've borrowed from a library, you're more likely to go out and buy a copy yourself.
Oh, yes. That happened to me the other day. I saw it's happened to me twice actually in my life. In one of the schools I taught in, I saw the book, The Poisonwood Bible by, Barbara Kingsolver, on the shelf. And I thought, that book looks good. And I read the back of it. I was supposed to be teaching some children at the time, but I was having a quick snoop around the shelf. And I thought, I'm going to borrow that. And I borrowed it from the school. And I was just blown away by this book. And I've bought every book she's written since.
Exactly,
and
yes.
And I borrowed a book this summer by Elizabeth Gilbert. And again, I was blown away by it. And I've put all her other books on my Christmas list.
So there are benefits, you see, we're introducing the public to all sorts of things that they maybe wouldn't pick up and buy without, it's almost being able to look before you buy, isn't it?
It's
really
a road test, isn't it? Yeah. Okay, back to information literacy and what schools can provide to students. So if there are students or parents listening, how should they just go into the school library and say, you know, I've got this piece of homework, I've been told in geography to research, I don't know, the eruption of Mount Pinatubo or something like that, and say to the librarian, what have you got that can help me? Is that the best way to go about it?
I think the first thing to do is for parents to find out whether your school has a librarian or somebody working in your library or not.
Mm-hmm.
If you have somebody, get your child to go in and ask what online resources are available.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully the librarian will give you a piece of paper that will show you how to access it.
Okay.
Most school libraries have an online catalogue. So it's almost, as a parent, I would be suggesting that you are encouraging your child to investigate it and do it themselves. So you want your child to go into school, if they don't know already how to use the online catalogue, to find out how and then to come home and show you. If you do that, what generally tends to happen is the fact that, yes, you know, if the homework isn't due for tomorrow and you've got a few days, then you can find the book that you need and send little Johnny in to get it from the library and bring it home and do your homework. If there's homework for the next day, then the online resources means that obviously you've got access to good quality immediately. If you've got a child who goes, no, there's nothing like that in my school, then the way to do it is a parents' evening.
Okay.
Go and find out from the teachers who works in your library and can you have their contact details. You know, school librarians would bite your hand off if a parent came and asked for resources for their child.
Okay.
You know, they would do, you know, a lot of the people that I know would actually do something, you know, if the parent wants to come in after school to have a quick look through how it all works, then I'm sure that way, you know, certainly if somebody asked me, I'd be more than happy to show them, you know, what resources were available. So I think the message is not to be frightened of asking,
yeah,
and to encourage your children to go and look.
Yeah, because I think I don't think I've ever really formed a relationship with the librarians that have been in my life. And, you know, there's been quite a few through school and university and things. The ones at university was so scary. It was unbelievable. But I think from what you're saying, librarians may have changed a bit in kind of the way how open they are. And that's the feeling I get going into libraries now compared to what they were in my own school days.
Absolutely. And I think what you've got to remember is a school librarian's job is a really difficult and lonely one, potentially, because they are different. They do teach, but they're different from teachers. So they're not necessarily part of that main group of people who work in a school. And it's trying to get that message across that actually, you know, they're not there just to sit and issue the books and to keep control at lunchtime. They're actually there to support the students in their research, but in their reading for pleasure. And, you know, such a fount of knowledge. These people are reading so much that actually, you know, it's about finding that right book for the right child. You know, it happens all the time just by a librarian picking up a book and knowing the child well enough to go, you should really try this one, you know. And it's about advocacy, and that's what this is about for me today, is to hopefully people are listening and they'll actually think to themselves, well, you know, okay, we're going to go and see what is in the school library and see what's there for us, because it might just surprise you all, you know.
Yeah, I think what you're really getting across to me is that I think from the outside, like I said at the beginning, the job of a librarian looks like quite a lowly kind of administrative job, you know, shuffling books around from here to there and stamping dates in. Well, they don't do that anymore, mate.
No.
Stamping dates in the front of books. But actually, it's a very skilled and, you know, a job that requires a lot of experience and thought and care and education. And I don't think librarians, well, I know I haven't perhaps given them the respect that they deserve up until this point in my life. So I thank you for opening my mind.
Good. it's really important that actually, you know, I blog about the fact that, you know, teachers have this wonderful resource, you know, area of expertise sitting in their school, and it's not used effectively, and it's because of lack of knowledge, lack of understanding, and lack of time. So, you know, I get it. You know, teachers are really, really busy.
I think, you know, I taught in schools for 4 years and I never knew this about school librarians. Yeah. And, you know, if only I'd been to, you know, when I've been researching case studies because I taught geography, you know, I've been to the school librarian and said, what have you got to help me with this? Or I want my students to research this. Which books have you got that we could use in the classroom or come to the library and look at or whatever?
We're going to say, if I was now working with you as a geography teacher, I would have some great online tools that we could use. We're now connecting students across the world using things like Google Hangouts and Padlet and Flipgrid. So my skills have changed recently in the last sort of 2 or 3 years in the fact that to engage the teachers, I'm making sure that my knowledge of online tools is good enough to be able to use them in a classroom setting. So we do a lot of training with teachers to show them how these tools can be used. But for those teachers that aren't quite ready for that yet, I will actually go into a classroom and do it with them. Yeah. So we're upskilling the students and giving them access to these things, but also, you know, upskilling the teachers at the same time. So yeah, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to a school librarian that you might, you know, but the only way people are going to find out is by talking to them and having conversations.
Yeah.
You know,
I think the other thing that you said there that really kind of piqued my interest was about kind of the knowledge of books that you have and how you can recommend them to individual students. I've got one coaching client and he's a young man, he's in year 10, and he wasn't really reading before I started working with him. And I've got a big thing about reading, that if students don't read, they're basically capping their level of performance in exams because they don't have the level of comprehension necessary or written skills to be able to answer the questions properly. You know, my big thing with him has been getting him reading, and he's been reading the same book since June when I first started working with him. And I've been trying to get him reading every day, and he has read more consistently in the holidays, but I've been saying to him, we've got to think about what you're going to read next after you've finished this book that's been going on forever. And I was saying, like, could you talk to like your peers and see what they've enjoyed? And because I'm convinced that if we find the right book, he'll just whip through it. So would you recommend that he should be going to talk to his school librarian?
Oh, absolutely, because there's new books coming out all of the time. Yeah. And, you know, generally speaking, your school librarian you know, it's impossible to read every book in the world, but most of the ones that are on the latest book awards, the ones that are, you know, especially teenage fiction, is really gripping and quite dark these days, which is interesting, but and is not necessarily my kind of thing, but it's certainly getting the interest of the teenagers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's about understanding. Actually, if a book's taking you 6 months to read, it's probably not the right book for you.
I've tried so many times to persuade him to give up on that book, but he's met the guy who wrote it and he's determined he's going to finish it.
Well, that's interesting. Well, maybe he needs to email the author once he's finished and have a conversation with him about it, because sometimes that's just enough, you know, that... Mm. You know, we bring authors into schools to talk to students about the books that they write, and actually putting a person to that book makes it more exciting and more interesting and understanding. So there's several things going on here. Is the fact that if you are a child who goes to the school library on a regular basis, and not necessarily because you like reading, just because it's a place to hang out, the school librarian will begin to understand your likes and dislikes. You know, there's usually magazines and, you know, other bits and pieces, coffee table books, that, you know, Guinness Book of Records, that kind of thing, that that you can just go along and hang out and, you know, flip through. But you will see, you will, you know, just by being surrounded by other people who are reading, it begins to rub off on you, and you will just find that right book. You know, it's out there. And I can, you know, I can remember myself. I was probably about 14, and I remember finding a book, and I can't tell you who wrote it. I just remember sitting in the library reading it, knowing that it wasn't a book that my mum had told me I had to read. It was a book I had chosen to read, and it. Just, you know, that understanding that it was my choice. Nobody could tell me what I could and couldn't read. And it was empowering, I think, is the word I would use now. I don't think I would have used it then. No. But, you know, it just is surprising that just give them enough books. You know, there are children at home that don't have any books. And actually, if you have a school library, we need to be getting our children into the libraries as much as we can in order to make sure that they are surrounded by the possibility of reading, if nothing else.
Yeah. So if there's a particular book that parents or their children know that they want to read or have access to, but they may be from a lower income family, can they come in, ask the school librarian to get that book into the school?
Yeah, it depends on budgets, do you know? But I, you know, I do know that there's a little bit of flexibility for the, you know, obviously they buy, school librarians buy books that are curriculum based, but they also buy the fiction. Mm-hmm. And there will be a little bit of leeway to buy those ones that the students are asking for. Yeah. So yes, it's certainly worth asking. If you find that, again, going back to public libraries, but if you find your school library can't, then your public library definitely will buy a book in for you. Oh, for nothing.
Okay. And I know that it's something like in the summer, my daughter was doing the summer reading challenge at the local library, and she wanted to read a book that she'd seen on the back of another book that she'd read, but the local library didn't have it, and they usually charge 20p to have it brought in to the library, but because it was the summer reading challenge, they waived that fee, which is really nice. And my mum used to do a lot of teaching, and she used to borrow books, and they came from all over the places, like Cambridge University Library and all sorts of things like that. But you could get them through to your local library, in fact our local library van in the village, and that she could get them to come right here to her.
That's fabulous. That's really good. And yeah, it is about understanding that if you want something, you just have to ask. You know if a book's no longer in print, then obviously that's a different story, but generally speaking, if you have got something that you've seen that you know, especially if it's something that's current, then certainly ask, because it's likely that it will be bought for you.
Okay, you hinted earlier on that school libraries and librarians themselves are under threat, and that budgets are a very big issue. Can you tell me what that is looking like in the UK at the moment?
It's looking very sad. you know, when budgets are cut, the first people that tend to be got rid of is the school librarian. Mm. And I think it goes back to our earlier conversation about the fact that schools don't completely understand what that person can actually do, what the value of that person is. What's happened recently, though, in England, there's been a big push to change that, because there is a lot of research that shows that school librarians and teachers working together will increase academic attainment. Teachers have a very set skill, and you know, where would we be without them? But I don't believe that teachers ever were supposed to do it on their own. And actually, with the skill of the information professional, the librarian in the school, just makes so much difference to the students. So I do think the tide is turning in a positive way, that actually the understanding of what a school librarian can do and the value of that person beyond the room itself is something that's going to be talked about, you know, in political circles, I think, in the days to come. You know, my Twitter feed was going mad with people talking about, you know, how important schools libraries were. And you know, if you talk to any author, they are advocates for libraries in any way, shape or form. You know, Chris Riddell, who's the was last year's Children's Laureate, is a great advocate for school libraries. So I think if you are a parent listening to this whose school doesn't have a school library or doesn't have a school librarian, then it's an interesting conversation to ask them why. I think you know, if you are where you have got a school library and a school librarian, then you know, we need parents to take action to go and make sure that those people are being used to their best value. You know, nobody wants, you know, we all talk about value for money, don't we? Well, you know, librarians, especially in schools, want to give that value for money, but can only do that if the parents and the teachers and everybody else who works in the school will actually understand the value and make the most of it. So, you know, I'm quite excited for the future for school libraries, because I think the tide is beginning to turn, which is good.
I just can't imagine an educational institution without a library. That just doesn't make sense in my head.
No.
How that could occur. And, you know, before this evening, I could maybe have understood, like, with the constrained budgets, not being able to pay for the head, you know, the salary of librarian. But when you really think about it, how do you look after those books and keep them in order and, you know, keep adding to the collection in a sensible way if you don't have someone there doing that? And teachers haven't got time to do that. That's never going to happen.
I was reading somebody's blog post just earlier today, and they had some statistics, and I can't remember them exactly, but it must have been a secondary school, but there was their loan statistics was something like 3,000 in a, may have been a year, so it might have been a small secondary, I don't know, but over the 3 years they paid off the librarian, and the last year's loan statistics was down to 30. Now, you know, if you've got nobody in there keeping the books up to date, if you've got nobody in there to help children find their book, then it is a room of books. It's not a library.
It's a storeroom, you know? Basically. Yeah.
Yes. And actually that's one reason to have a librarian in your school, but it's not the only one. Do you know? There's the value is so much greater than that number of loans going out, you know, but that's significant, really, isn't it? If you think about it, that it goes down. So that person in the room is making children in the school read.
Yeah, which is so important for academic attainment.
It is.
So, hopefully what you're saying is it's working on me. I'm hoping it's working on all the listeners as well, turning us into advocates for school libraries. How do we make change happen? What do we do? Who do we go and shout at to keep our school libraries open and keep our librarians employed?
Your politicians, and I can't think of the local one that was on the paper today, but there was an open. If you go onto Twitter and type in "School Libraries Matter," you'll see the posts that actually are talking about advocating for your school library. You know, go and ask your head teacher. Have you got a school librarian? Is she qualified? Is he qualified? Have you, you know, if you haven't got a qualified librarian, but there's somebody there, then that's great. You know, if it's somebody that is being allowed to do the job effectively and with meaning and purpose, then that's great. But parents should not accept that they have a school that has a room full of books, which they call a library. If they've got nobody to manage it, then they need to be shouting about it and asking why.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, we know what to do now. So one last question before we begin to finish off. What advice would you give to students who are thinking about a career in librarianship? So particularly if they've listened to this episode and they've thought, oh, that sounds more interesting than I thought it was. What should they do? How do they go in that direction?
Okay, so to become a qualified librarian, you need to have a degree in library and information services. Mm-hmm. So once you've got your degree, you can then work.
What kind of A level would you take to get onto that degree?
You would need English, and but it's like most degrees, isn't it, these days? You don't actually need to. You could have any of them. It doesn't really matter. You do the A levels that you want to do. English would be a good option. But if you wanted to do IT, that would work. If you wanted to do geography or history, that would work. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't really matter. What does matter is that you are learning how the system works, but also that there are more options once you've got your qualification. So you would have your qualification, but then you could go into any sort of library. So you could specialise. You know, there are medical libraries, there are law libraries, there are university libraries. So it, you know, we all think, when we think about a library, probably the first two that come to mind are the public ones and the school library. Mm-hmm. And actually there's far more to it than that. And just to understand that actually, you know, if you want to become a librarian, it's a tough career, because they are, the expertise is being narrowed down and not understood as much, and actually, you know, there are less jobs than there were, but the skill of a librarian can be used in all sorts of different professions. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that would ever be lost.
Yeah, you know? I remember a friend at university, her mother was a trained librarian, but she actually worked in a solicitor's office and kept all the records. Yeah. And archives and everything. So
absolutely, yeah, so archivists as well. So it, you know, there's such a lot that once you, it's a bit like when you train to be a nurse and then you can decide that you're going to be a midwife, so you go and do that bit, or you're going to be mm-hmm. Working the theatre, you would then do something, you know, do yeah. something else. It's a bit the same. You get the basic qualification and then you specialise.
Fantastic. Well, that's really great to know. So, Elizabeth, if people want to get involved in fighting the good fight for school libraries or just want to chat to you about anything else we've talked about today, where can they find you online?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. It's Elizabeth Utch.
Elizabeth Utch.
So basically you don't put the two H's in the middle. There's just one.
Okay.
So that's my Twitter. You can find me. You can find my blog again, Elizabeth Hutchinson. If you just type in Elizabeth Hutchinson blog, you'll find libraries. You'll find me. And I'm on LinkedIn. So again, type in Elizabeth Hutchinson Guernsey, and you'll find me. But you know, I'm happy to talk about school libraries, or you know, if you're struggling to find information and you need it and you don't know where to go for it, then certainly get in touch with me. That's not a problem.
Fantastic. And I'll put the links to all those in the show notes. So this is my geographer head on. How did you get from Newcastle to Guernsey? That's my last question.
It was my husband's job 26 years ago, and we thought we were going to come here for 18 months, and I was going to go back to Newcastle and tell everyone I'd lived in Guernsey for 18 months. And 26 years later, and four children, and a now job in Schools Library Service, we're still here, and I'm, you know, maybe I'll go home eventually.
Well, it's been absolutely wonderful having you on the School Success Formula today. Thank you so much for sparing your time, and I wish you great success in spreading the word about school libraries in the future.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been great to be able to talk to you, and hopefully we've inspired a few people to walk into their school library tomorrow.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Well, wasn't that a great interview with Elizabeth? I hope you found it really useful and that you will at least pay a visit to your school library, or encourage your children, if you're a parent listening, to visit their school library in the next few days and just see what's there, what resources they've been neglecting and how those resources can help them. I must say, I spent an awful lot of time in my school library when I was in the sixth form, and I loved borrowing alternative textbooks in particular. So when I was studying A-level biology, I often used to get a different textbook out from the one that was the core textbook for the course to see the different explanations and get a different level of detail, and that really, really helped with my understanding. So please do go and visit your school library, and support school librarians in every way possible. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and goodbye.